Welcome to Winning Is Not Everything, where we bring sanity back to youth sports by focusing on character development, effort, and sportsmanship, not rankings and trophies, in conversations with some of your favorite athletes and coaches. I'm your host, Sean Jensen, former NFL reporter, children's book author, and youth sports coach. Today, I'm speaking to Larry McKenzie, a Hall of Fame basketball coach in Minneapolis, about his story and his insights as our community struggles after the unjust killing of George Floyd. I've taped episodes with several guests to kick off season two of Winning Is Not Everything. But the other day, after the inexcusable death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, my wife said, "You need to have a conversation with Coach McKenzie." My immediate response, "You're absolutely right." Coach Larry McKenzie is one of the wisest people I know. Many know him for his success as a high school basketball coach, leading two different public programs, Patrick Henry and Minneapolis North, to a combined six state titles. He's won the prestigious Bush Fellowship. He's already in the Minnesota Boys Basketball Hall of Fame, and he was honored during the 2019 Final Four in Minneapolis with a Guardian of the Game Award from the National Association of Basketball Coaches. But more important, he's impacted thousands of lives through his coaching, working almost exclusively with African-American players and defying statistics and diminished expectations to boast a near-perfect graduation rate and to transition most of his players to college. You can read the story that initially connected us by visiting my new website, seankjensen.com. Though he's from the South, Coach McKenzie has made Minneapolis his home, and so I felt compelled to get his insight in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing. Without further ado, let's dive into our conversation with Coach Larry McKenzie. Well, I'm excited to have with me Coach Larry McKenzie. Coach, thank you so much for taking some time to join me.
Thank you, Sean. Always an honor.
Coach, I wanted to take this opportunity to have you on because of my deep respect for you, your commitment to Minneapolis and North Minneapolis, and especially in light of what's happening in our community after the murder of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. But before we dive into that, Coach, I want to give people a chance to hear a little bit about your background. Tell people about where you're from and your initial connection to sports.
So I would tell people, boy, where I start. I grew up in Miami, Florida. I'm the oldest of four kids of Lawrence McKenzie, who is a former educator and coach as well. He didn't coach at a high school, but he definitely was involved with the parks in Dade County. And Aretha McKenzie, who was an elementary school teacher. So played my high school basketball at Miami Beach High School. And then I got an opportunity to continue to pursue that at the University of Wisconsin River Falls. Then that is what have led me to the Twin Cities.
Which coach encouraged and inspired you most when you were younger?
I'll have to give that credit to my high school basketball coach, Chuck Filson. And I don't know, Sean, to be honest with you, I don't know if inspired is the right word for him, because he was a older white gentleman from the mountains of West Virginia. So sometime I could tell you he could not coach in this time and era, because there were times when he just might have said some things that would be considered very inappropriate these days. Like I said, I don't know if I would say inspired, but I could tell you certainly he found a way to motivate me. You know what I'm saying? And very open, honest, no hold bars kind of guy. And it worked for me at that time in my life and where I was as a young man.
I think one of the things that stuck out to me as we've gotten to know each other so well is the fact that you say that this incredibly gentle and wise and composed and thoughtful man that I know today, you were vastly different as a young person. Tell me about what you kind of went through when you were younger.
Yeah, so, it's funny, Sean, because obviously with what's going on in our community, right, having a conversation with my son, Lawrence, who you know well, the other day about just, I know you want to get out. I know you want to do your civic duty and all of those kind of things. I want you to just, you know, be careful, be aware of your surrounding and all of that kind of stuff. And so as we were having this dialogue, it's funny. He said to me, he said, oh, so dad, you just like the Martin Luther King type. And I started laughing. And I said, Lawrence, maybe you should call your grandma because obviously you really don't know your dad. And it's funny because of how he see me now and how he heard that conversation. So my parents met on the campus of Florida A&M University. My dad, you know, whether it was across the hill or whatever on Tallahassee, saw my mom. They got together. You know, one thing led to another, and eventually it led to them dropping out of college. You know, so I was a product of a teen mom. My mom is only 19 years older than me. So that was a challenge. I mean, and so the fact that they had dropped out, the early years were not as good as my latter years in terms of things. Eventually, both of my parents would go back to college and get their degrees. But we had some challenges early on, you know, about living in different places and that kind of thing. Something that I did not understand in the 60s and the 70s. My dad was honestly a weekend alcoholic. He worked hard. My dad had three jobs all my life. So he would work hard and then he partied hard on the weekend. And that was something that just did not sit well with me. I mean, some of the behaviors that he had when he had alcohol in him, I was challenged by that. So I carried that anger with me everywhere that I went. I played a lot of, you know, when I was a football player at the Miami's boys club, mom would show up, grandpa would show up sometime, but dad just was working, you know, basketball games, dad was working. So all of those kind of things, like, you got time to drink, but you can't, you know what I'm saying? You can't come to my games and all of those kind of things. So I was a angry, angry young man for a very long time. I mean, somebody asked me the other day, like, when did you feel like you matured? It was around 1980, 81, family Christmas gathering at my grandmother's house in Walterboro, South Carolina. My dad was there. We were celebrating, just about to have dinner, and I just let it all go. I just let it all go. And it, you know what? It changed the relationship. And in his latter days, you know, my dad did stop drinking, got involved with the church. He became one of my best friends. You know, we spent a lot of time together and we've got some great memories. My first four state titles that I won with my son, my dad was sitting in the Excel Center and the Target Center for every one of those victories. So a lot of memories at the end. But I really wish I would have been able to ask my dad now. I remember the incident when I was 10 years old, walking downtown Miami. We walked by Woolworth. And we saw people eating at the counter and me and my sister was asking for something to eat. My dad was like, nah, you know, let's wait. We'll get home and all of that kind of stuff. And I didn't know what the sign said then. I do know what the sign said now. No colors allowed. And I just always wondered from that point after he's been gone now, like, how did that make you feel that day as an educated black man with money in your pocket, having to tell your kids that you could, you know, with the inability to take your kids in there and get them something to eat? And I thought about, as I got older and in the era that I grew up, how many experiences like that did he have where he felt like less than a man that led him to some of the alcohol abuse or some of those things that he dealt with as a way of easing his pain? And obviously, you know, I saw it as excessive drinking and I struggled with it. But what I did not know was the pain that he had dealt with that week, whether on any of those three jobs of being an educated black man and, you know, having to be talked to a certain way and, you know, having limited to certain positions, maybe being more knowledgeable about something and never being promoted in a job. Those are things that as a 15-year-old or 16-year-old or 17-year-old, I didn't understand. Even as a 21-year-old, I didn't understand.
Coach, what's one thing you would tell your 8, 12, or 16-year-old self?
First of all, something that I've learned now, don't ever get caught up into how you see things as they are now. You always have to have a vision about where you want to be and where you want to go. Even in the midst of a storm, no matter how many days, after 40 days and 40 nights, the sun will shine again. And you gotta persevere. And obviously, as a young man, I didn't understand perseverance, right? I didn't know what that meant or what that looked like. But that's one of the things that I wouldn't do now. I would just say, whatever you do, Larry, don't give up. This is not, man, in this time and space, when you're growing up, it's not going to be easy. But don't give up. If I was sitting myself down at the dinner table right now, that is a message.
Coach, I remember you told me that you were doing very well professionally, but you started volunteering through the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. How did that change your entire trajectory in your life?
So growing up in a household with two teachers is the one, I learned one thing. I didn't want to do that. Didn't want to work with kids. So I was in sales. I mean, started out at Prudential, doing very, very well. Could have had a great corporate career. Got involved with Big Brothers. At that time in my life, I thought I didn't have enough time. I thought I didn't make enough money. I just didn't see the impact that I can have. But I got involved with Big Brothers with the hope and desire of impacting the life of a 13-year-old young man at the time, Jules Dunbar. And so Jules, as part of, you know, and I tell people, so me and Jules began hanging out. We discovered the number one thing that we had in common, we both loved the game of basketball. And so one day Jules walking through the hallway at his incarnation over South, he hear the principal and some adults talking in the hallway. Well, how are we going to tell these kids this year that we're not going to have a basketball team because nobody wants to coach, right? Probably the stipend wasn't high enough or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So I'll never forget. I think me and Jules, I'm supposed to pick him up. We're going to a Twins game or something like that at the time or some kind of sporting event. And Jules was like, I just heard we didn't have a coach. And I know you play basketball and you like basketball. So guess who's going to be coaching our team? I'm like, huh? You did what, Jules? I lost the argument. I ended up coaching that team for a couple years. I became a Big Brother, expecting the impact and influence of life of a 13-year-old young man. And because of Jules, my life was forever changed. It's because of Jules that I would later go on and, you know, volunteer and become a coach at Patrick Henry High School. It's because of Jules that I stayed in. And later, you know, the fact of having a son that I stayed in the coaching. But I may have influenced and changed his life, but honestly, he impacted my life. To the young adults, know that you can make a difference. Know that you can make a difference. I would say that. And it may not have to be monetary. Sometimes it could be time. It could be other things. Sometimes it could just be having a conversation with a young person. I want young adults to know that. And then young people, learning is a two-way street. I'm telling you that because of Jules, my life was changed. And you just don't know the kind of influence that you can have. Sometimes you can, in your ability to take, you can be given. And so you got to leave yourself open for those opportunities is what I'm really trying to say. And I think sometimes we miss our blessing. If I had not became a Big Brother, if I had not got involved with Jules, I mean, no doubt about it, I would have taken a different path. But he changed my life.
Coach, we could spend a lot of time talking about the amazing games and lives that you've changed at North High School. But I want to fast forward a little bit now to the present. You know, when did you find out what happened to George Floyd?
About 6:30 a.m., Pam came running into the bedroom saying, have you seen the video? My phone immediately started ringing from people in the community. Have you seen the video? Have you seen the video? Whew, I got to take a deep breath on this one. I watched the video, Sean, and it rings and rings and rings in my head. When I heard George Floyd say, Mama, Mama, And I just can't get that. I mean, every time I have the conversation, son, I can't get that out of my head. 46-year-old man calling out to his mom.
Our community's in pain. Our country's in pain. I mean, the video is so egregious. And it's affected people I've seen in New Zealand. I know we just talked about this the other day. How do you approach this?
It's been extremely tough. But what I reckon when, and we talked about this a little bit today, is kind of trying to stay in my lane and do what I can do. I've been blessed through God's assistance to have this platform, to be able to have an opportunity to share with people like yourself. And so every opportunity that I get is to use this platform as a coach, as a successful high school basketball coach, to talk about it. I just think it's important. And then more than anything, Sean, and I just challenge some of my coworkers, I've taken a personal vow that I won't get too busy, that I won't just go back to my job as an educator, that I won't get too busy coaching, that I won't get too busy trying to get the next kid to college, that I will let this go away and not be talked about until we get a solution. Sean, when I was growing up as a kid, you could beat your wife, call the police, and nothing would happen because they didn't have laws around domestic abuse. But women kept fighting, and that no longer exists. You could get behind a steering wheel. You could drive a car. You can get drunk and kill somebody, and you didn't go to jail. You didn't do time. You lost your license. But moms, mothers against drunk driving, kept fighting. And so now that's no longer acceptable. We can do something about this. We can do something about this. And so I am in the spirit. I have said this to my son. I've said this to my players. I will not get too busy this time and let this not be a priority so that it happens to someone else and then we're right back to the same place. You know, that's where I'm at right now in terms of handling this. I've also said to people that if you are human, like, this is not about black and white. This is an issue about wrong and right. And if you're human at all you got to do is just close your eyes and just exchange the color of that man. You know, make it a black cop kneeling on a white guy's neck. It's inhumane and it's not acceptable. But the reason that I say this is not about black and white is because if I'm a white person and I base this on race, I could say I don't understand because I've never been in that situation. So I'm just going to excuse myself from this conversation right now, and I'm going to let you guys handle that. That's your problem. Not this time. It's our problem. Not this time. Not this time. You're not going to be able to walk away from this that easy. Not about black and white. It's about wrong and right. And if you're a human being, you'll stand up and you'll make the same promise that I've made, that you're not going to get too busy and let this happen to somebody else without being some different kind of laws on the book and a different process about how this is handled.
We can't fix anything till we all agree that there's a problem. And why does a black man's life depend on the production quality, the angle of a video to determine right or wrong? I mean, imagine if we didn't have this video, right? And so when a black person's killed, it's it's hard to tell. They maybe did something wrong. Or the reason this is such a big deal is it's just so egregious. There are private citizens who are there calling it out play by play. Okay, he's had enough. Put him in the back. And I'm haunted by two things. By George Floyd calling out for his mother. And I'm haunted by the look on that officer's face. Just the sheer disdain to look at the citizens who are recording with their cameras and be so defiant to think, nothing's going to happen to me.
Exactly. That's you 100%.
That's where we're at.
That is the look that he had. Yep, nothing's going to happen to me. Yep. The one thing that we cannot do, you know, and this is the beauty of coaching, we can't look up at the scoreboard and say that we're so far behind that the game is over. Mm. We can't look at the scoreboard and say that we're so far behind, you know, let's pull the team off the floor. The game is over. We got to keep fighting. We got to keep
fighting. Love that, coach. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the first episode of Season 2 of Winning Is Not Everything. If you like the podcast, please do this for me. Subscribe, write a review, and share, share, share. And if you have questions for me, reach out through my website, seankjensen.com. Winning is not everything, but the three H's to be a real hero in life are hustle, humility, and heart. I'm your host, Sean Jensen, and we'll see you again next time.